You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for July 12th, 2022. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that lies between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. And we are also streaming live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start, as usual, by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Fun Space Inventory. The assignment was to take a critical look at materials you kept for hobbies, arts, or crafts, and thin out stuff that doesn't need to be there anymore. And specifically, we talked about things you're keeping because of how much money you spent, basic materials that you've more or less outgrown, or your tastes have changed, so you're not interested in those particular materials, aspirational clutter, things that you thought you might enjoy and maybe didn't.
Never got there.
Or things that you can't use anymore because of physical limitations. So we'd love to hear from people in the chat. Did anybody tackle their craft, hobby, or art clutter this week? I didn't really get rid of anything, but I did work in this area myself this week. I have been buying lots of...
Yeah, you started getting into your crafty art side.
I have, and I've been buying lots of new stuff. And so what I did this week was I made an inventory in a Google Drive spreadsheet so that I can keep track of what I've bought so that I don't go buy duplicates. So I will at least not, you know, that's more of a clutter prevention thing than a clutter deletion thing.
Yep. You're going down the hobby hole though. You're starting to get into the, ooh, I don't have that color of green. I need another green pencil.
There, you can never have enough green magic markers.
That's right.
And my art supply store of choice, which is on the North Shore in the trendy district of Chattanooga, just got a new line of xylene based markers, and they must have this. They have this carousel, this huge four-sided carousel. They must have, I don't know, there must be easily 150 colors on there. I'm going to go nuts.
They're just getting started too, man. You watch, it'll get bigger.
Oh yeah.
They bought the starter set. There's going to be, if they're popular, they will add more colors.
M said the physical limitation was that I did not create a space to use them and can't fight my way to them now because of other clutter.
That's definitely a blockage, right? Like when the path is blocked to actually get to the stuff, you certainly can't use them. Well, and again, that's when you start clearing out the floor and trying to make a pathway
to get your supplies. Well, and M added, a chronic disease prevents use of my professional art supplies, but hope to regain health and am improving and better than I was several years ago. If I get rid of my supplies, it is like giving up and letting my disease win. I do not have an income that supports rebuying these supplies.
Okay. And you might consider if you could still look at the quantity and the quality of the stuff and see if it's all still in good shape, if it's all still material, like paint dries up, things get, you know, the pins in particular dry up a lot. And so if there's any supplies that you can't use or won't use going forward, you can at least thin it out for the 10 or 15% of stuff that isn't going to be useful when you regain your health.
Well, and we always say, you know, clutter is stuff that gets in the way of the life you want to be living. And so if this stuff is not in your way and you can hold on to it for that day down the road when you're ready to pick it up again, that's fine and not clutter by our usual definition.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody did say, oh gosh, what was I thinking about? Somebody made a comment earlier. I guess they put it on the YouTube channel. And what were they saying about the art supplies? Oh, it went in my head and went out of my head. It'll come back to me in a minute. Sorry.
Janice, who's with us on Facebook, said, finally live with you. I'm decluttering by crafting as I watch you.
Oh, yay. Craft along with us. That's awesome.
And she added, I plan to declutter seriously by the end of the summer. Meanwhile, I'm working a lot on sewing. By the end of the summer, I'll see what I've used and enjoyed and what I didn't. And I plan to give away the leftovers and take up drawing. I'm back to all ends from hobbies from a few years long and tiresome thesis writing. I didn't quite get that, but...
It sounds like she's been working on a thesis, and so she hasn't had any time to have fun. So,
yeah,
so now getting back having fun.
Well, that's a great strategy too, to set aside some time during the summer. Oh, I'm back to all kinds of hobbies from a few years long and tiresome thesis writing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. And I was saying, I think that strategy is great. Use the stuff for a couple of months, however much time you have off, and then evaluate what's working for you and what you don't need anymore.
Yeah, what's interesting or not. And she reminded me of what I was thinking of. The comment that got made was, when you're looking to donate those excess supplies and particularly those beginner supplies, that all kinds of Girl Scout and Boy Scout troops and vacation Bible schools and places like that and senior centers have all kinds of arts and crafts activities for those small groups of kids and senior adults. And so when you're going to try to find a place to donate stuff, you just got to tap into your entertainment group collection in the area and go find that Girl Scout troop or that Boy Scout troop or that senior center where they're providing activities for people to sit at a table and be creative and be stimulated. And they will be certainly happy to have your free supplies to do it. It was a good reminder that I hadn't thought to say during the show last week, so I wanted to remember to say it today.
M added, the tittle inspired me. I see what I saved beyond what I can use and see that a major problem is that I didn't create a work area for arts and crafts. I am going to create a wonderful workspace.
Oh, good. Because, you know, if you have that creative bent, when you're not doing it, you forget how rewarding and refreshing it is to do it. But if you can make the space and go be creative and crafty in whatever floats your boat, you get so much reward out of it. And it's so mentally supportive to do it. And so make it a priority and go get to playing. Go make your workspace happen so you can go play.
Okay, I think we should move on to our main topic because we have a lot to talk about.
Okay.
In most homes, the kitchen is a center of activity, but all that traffic can lead to confusion and disagreement about how it should be used and what belongs in this critical space. Today, we're going to examine the problem of kitchen clutter and suggest strategies for streamlining the heart of your home.
As Ed says, kitchens are such active spaces. The whole family goes in and out of there all day long, always with the goal of grabbing something from the pantry or the fridge. The kitchen activity really doesn't stop until everybody's in bed. And sometimes there are midnight visitors too. All the household wants meals and snacks and drinks several times a day. And some of that's generated by major cooking projects. It operates like a restaurant does. It opens when people get up and it runs all day until closing time. If a restaurant never cleaned up behind a day's worth of meal generation, they would quickly be unable to provide any meals for lack of clean equipment or workspace. Your kitchen is the same. It needs constant and continuous reset to stay operational. And we're going to talk about that today. First, I want to say thanks to everybody who answered the survey that we put out about their kitchens. And we got some good details about kitchen issues. The key survey takeaways are that 91% of the people that answered say that they experience kitchen clutter. Not a surprising response.
Not a bit.
Not a bit. Of those who experience the clutter, 86% report that it's a chronic problem, and more than 30% say that it's out of control or a nightmare. And again, not a shocker at all. So clearly, this is a problem for a lot of people. So you reported to us that your major clutter generators are countertops. It's a major emphasis basically on that wide open flat surface that is the countertop that everybody has trouble with. The kitchen as a drop-off zone, so especially for paper or mail, that's a clutter generator. Dirty dishes that are never ending and hard to stay on top of. The fact that your kitchen is a small space or has too many appliances. Another response is that there's insufficient storage space because the kitchen isn't exactly a storage zone. That's part of the problem. Things with no dedicated home. Lots of you commented about that. Special occasion cookware and serving pieces is a management problem for everybody in the kitchen. Too much variety in food ingredients. I thought that was an interesting one, Ed, that they would comment on the fact that they have too much variety of things to cook with. So I was surprised by that one.
And I think that for the major cause for that, I think is, I mean, that's a form of aspirational clutter because we shop without a list, you know, some of the time, or maybe we do meal planning, but our eyes are bigger than our stomach, as as grandma used to say in our meal planning. And so, you know, we plan the six fabulous things we're going to cook this week.
Yeah,
but we only actually get around to doing three of them, and then we order pizza and pick up some chicken sandwiches or something. And so we end up with a whole lot of stuff that we had an idea for, and then time goes by and we forget why we bought it.
Yeah, and then it dies and you have to throw it out.
Yeah, eventually. Yes.
Eventually. Okay. So also another clutter problem, clutter generation, was the buying in bulk. Buying in bulk is entertaining and fun, and it's not really a useful kitchen stocking strategy for everyone. Not everyone can make good use of buying in bulk. If you have a big family and lots of action in the kitchen, buying things in bulk makes sense. If you're generating large volumes of food, you're supplying large volumes of snacks, that makes sense. But, you know, if you're living alone or there's only two of you and you're still going to Costco and buying, you know, a pickle jar that would make pickles available for 400 people, then you're going to throw some pickles away. So buying in bulk really doesn't work for everybody.
And you have to go armed with a very specific idea of what you're doing when you go to the Costco or Sam's or whatever your bulk place. And if it's not something you use all the time, if it's not a real staple of your diet, don't buy it in bulk, you know?
Yeah. It just means it's going to go bad.
We get, quarts of stock, because we use that all the time in making soups and sauces. And we used to get canned black beans. Since we got the Instant Pot, we tend to do dry beans, but diced tomatoes, because diced tomatoes go into
practically everything we cook.
And that's, and that's about it. Other than, some special thing that catches my eye, that's all we buy at Costco.
Because if you're not cooking for an army, then it doesn't make sense to buy a box of cereal that is extra large, because then you have to be the one to eat all the cereal, or it's open and it gets stale before you can get to the bottom. So you really have to buy in bulk based on the consumption level in your household. And it's something that people, I mean, they want the savings of buying in bulk, but if you end up not being able to consume it fast enough to make it worth your while, then that whole methodology just doesn't make sense for you.
Here's a great tip from Gina. She said, bulk shopping, I number the container, 1 of 4, 2 of 4, et cetera. This way I know that I don't need to buy more when I'm on number 2 of 4.
Right. Because you've still got 3 and 4 to go somewhere. Yeah, and that's good.
M said, sometimes when shopping Costco or Sam's with a friend, we can split some of the items.
Yeah. If you want to make that
plan.
We
do that as well. We'll text my sister or brother-in-law and say, hey, before we buy a gross of such and such, would you take some of these?
I know it always looks like, oh, look, we can buy this extra huge box of strawberries that weighs 5 pounds. And isn't that lovely? And then it's like, oh yeah, now I have to eat 5 pounds of strawberries before it dies. And I have to do it in 72 hours. It's like,
right.
Yeah, it's not really a good plan unless you're having a major party. So the last major clutter generator that went on the list was that other people put stuff in the kitchen. So yes, it is a zone that lots of people make use of as a drop zone. And it is very irritating when other people add things to your kitchen that don't belong there. It happens and it's annoying. We also asked the questions about who said that they don't experience kitchen clutter for their key strategies and their techniques. So if you don't have a problem with clutter, tell us how you accomplish it. And here's what they say. The theme number one is they have good habits about the kitchen, like dealing with dirty dishes right away, cleaning up as I prepare food. That was a common one. Doing quick cleanups after each meal, doing the dishes every day, making sure everything is clean and put away before I go to bed. So those habits of staying in there and rotating and keeping it clean, rotating the dishes through their cycle, getting them put away over and over again. Those good habits are part of how they don't have kitchen clutter. The second theme was that there's a place for everything. So it's easy to put stuff away. They know when they finish this dish and it's on the dryer or comes out of the dishwasher dry, that there's a specific place for it to go. And if you stand at the dishwasher or at the rack, the drying rack, and you pick up something and you immediately go, you know where to go and put it away and you can go put it up quickly, then that means that you can unload the dishwasher or unload the drying rack in 2 minutes most of the time and get everything put away. That becomes infinitely more difficult if they don't have a perfect place to go. They don't have a standard parking space in your kitchen. The third theme, keep only what you use and need. So that is basically don't stock the kitchen with every single possibility. Make sure the kitchen has things that you actually use, things that you need to prepare food the way that you like to prepare it, and that the extra is not in there, that the extra either doesn't stay or it doesn't live in the kitchen. Those are good themes and those are good ideas of how do I maintain this ongoing work zone that is the kitchen. So then one other question we asked was about organizing solutions that the audience have tried for better or for worse. And we got some great answers in here. So I want to share those. Elizabeth's response was, so far, nothing works. Brain transplant. I'm thinking brain transplant.
that seems like more of an extreme than I think we can come up with some less extreme solutions to try first.
Surely there's another way. And actually my comment to you, my sincere comment to you is you just have to see the kitchen and its effect on you in a different light and shifting how you see the kitchen and understanding how it works will help you change those habits. The most frequent answer that we received, like I said earlier, was have a place for everything and put it back where it belongs. And this is exactly why you can't store collections in the kitchen, like people that collect dinnerware and they go and put four sets of china in the cabinets in the kitchen. This is not, the kitchen is an active work zone and it is not a storage space. And you don't ever have enough kitchen space, kitchen cabinet space to store stuff that you're collecting and not using. And so you need that storage space to hold the tools and the equipment that you're actively using and to make it easy to take it out and to put it back. So you have to rethink everything you park in the kitchen through that filter. Everything needs to have a place so that you can put things back where they belong. And you, that means you have to get rid of or get out of there everything that isn't in active use. Some specific strategies that people suggested, pull out drawers was a big theme. Pull out drawers, especially for the lower cabinets. And Deborah was one of the respondents who shared this solution. And she said the best organizing or storage for the kitchen is pull out drawers. Under the counter cupboards, unless there is only one or two things on the shelves, are a nightmare. And that is so true. The more that's in the cabinet,
they're too deep to be practical.
Yeah. You know, the more that's in there, the less useful they become. That is 100% true. And so she's making a very valid point, which is if you can get those pull out drawers so that you can pull out the, what in essence is the flat surface of the cabinet and see the whole, see all of it, you can A, get access to it easier, and B, be able to put things in and out. You can stack a little bit and still be able to close it and put it away. And so you get to use the whole, you know, the whole flat surface is it that is the counter, the cabinet shelf, by making it be a pull-out drawer. And that gives you a lot more flexibility in terms of accessing it. And otherwise, you know, you have to get on the floor and stick your head in a cabinet. And that is the most annoying thing in the kitchen.
Well, and that's a really important tall person solution. You know, if you're the lower cabinets are nearly useful for tall people, other than, you know, anything that's right in the very front. So the pullouts make it so you can use so much more space practically. Exactly. Yeah.
Pat has her hand up.
While pullout shelves can be expensive, I just use like a box or a box lid that's deep. If it's if it's not stuff that's used very often, that box can just go back and then put a couple things in front of it that I do use.
That works.
It really does help, just, and they're free. So
exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Well, and you know, they do have to fit into the cutout of the cabinet, like your access hole to the cabinet. But you know, it does mean that you can slide things out and look into a box and slide it back. And I use that technique all over the kitchen. Instead of lining the little soldiers up on the shelf, to put things in a container that can be pulled out or brought down and then fished out of and put back is a great solution. Again, you give up some space for the container, and the container can't be, you know, stacked a million miles high if you want it to come out the hole. But if it gives you the flexibility, if you can make it fit, to put something far away and then back in the deep recesses. And then when you want the baking stuff, you can go pull that tray or that box out. And
I noticed that someone just maybe mentioned like a cookie sheet. You know, to have
that works too.
Just anything that you can pull out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Shallow bin that fits snugly inside the space with, you know, with enough room to move from side to side, as long as what you're keeping in it is fairly lightweight, so that you could pull out the whole bin, put it on the counter, get what you need, slide the bin back in. I've seen that solution.
Yeah, thank you. And pull-out drawers are expensive. And whether you go for the upgrade that is pull-out drawers or you use a cookie sheet or a box, it doesn't change the fact that you're not stuffing that cabinet 100%, that 3D cubic volume. It cannot be stuffed 100%. In order to slide the box out or slide the cookie sheet, you got to be able to take two or three things out from in front of it and slide it out. So the pathway to slide it has to be clear. And so you can't have a box back there covered with a whole bunch of a big stack of stuff in front of it, or it's not any easier because you still have to move everything in front of it. So ultimately you want to be, you're still looking at a lower volume of stuff, and you can just corral the stuff by category better in those boxes and slide them. And thank you for the low cost solution. That's a good one. All right.
Let's go to Marsh before we move on.
Okay.
I have an old mobile, everybody. And where my cabinets are above my kitchen and sink, and I'm 5'8" and almost 5'9", I have to reach up into the cabinets and stand just to get on the outer shelf. So I gave up using those cabinets. And what I've been doing is I put things that are non-essential up there. And I thank you for these containers. I have started to witness at all the grocery stores, and I have Trader Joe's, Fred Meyer's, and Safeway, those organic containers that they're coming out with. Well, guess what? They can't reuse those containers. We can. So I have them literally calling me now, and they're little tiny from cardboard, about 2 inches high, 6 inches long, 4 wide. And they're you can reuse them over and over again. And I just go and pick up, and I put them on my bigger box, which is like Top Ramen or all these like cat can boxes are perfect for my shelves. I slide them in with the little organic containers, everybody. And it's just a few minutes of my time. I'm not spending a bunch of money, and they're very healthy. They're replaceable. They're organic, and they match my decor. So I wanted to say thank you for this subject about containers.
Oh, cool.
And great. So thank you all.
You're so welcome. And that sounds like it's a very good low cost solution for cabinets. And see, tall people can reach up farther than short people. And so everybody has their version of, if you're short, the lower cabinets work and the upper ones don't. And if you're tall, it's the other way around. And so everybody has to adapt somewhere, either over their head or under their feet, depending. And so those solutions work in both places. And thanks for sharing. Okay, so another comment about pullout drawers. Having 3 pullout drawers under the cooktop is a godsend. Everything we need at the stove must fit into those 3 drawers. The number of pots and pans is kept to the bare minimum in order to keep what's often used close at hand and easily retrievable. It's surprising how few sizes you really need. Small, medium, and large frying pan, same for pots. Only 1 grater, 1 strainer, and 1 colander. Again, this is how an active drawer is functional, not because it's holding as much as possible, because it holds only what's necessary to function easily as well and well. And that is that's the goal for all your cabinets in the kitchen. There's only so many cabinets, there's only so many drawers. And if you want them to be easy in and out, you want to be able to prepare food every day, wash the dishes, dry the dishes, and put them back, the dishes and the pots and pans, that whole process is going to happen over and over again every day. And the only way to make that easy or easier is if all of those drawers and cabinets have a function for specific pieces, and none of them are overstuffed, and they're not full of things that you're not using. And having options in the kitchen, it has a very inverse reaction to the functionality of the kitchen. So the more options of ways that you can cook, tools that you can use, things that you can grab to participate in the kitchen process, the cooking process, the harder it is going to be to function and store things in that kitchen. So this is a very good point. Aim for a container.
Well, I like that. That was a great response too, because it kind of addressed the, you don't have to have 3 of everything. Problem. I'm as guilty of this as anyone. You watch cooking shows and you see them using a colander that's so much better than the one you like best. So you go find that, and then you also notice another one that's kind of cool that you don't have, and Yeah, you know, we'd all love to be able to cook in an industrial kitchen or a restaurant kitchen here in our home that has six of everything, so we never have to rinse in between uses. But there's a cost for that, and that is too much stuff that's too hard to get at, and in the way of the things that are the real workhorses. I liked that was Deborah's response. I like Deborah's comment about, you know, small, medium, and large frying pans, and you don't have to have three of each,
right.
just one in each size. And yeah, there will be times when you have to stop in between making the side dish and making the sauce to transfer something to the serving dish and rinse the pan. But that's a better compromise than not being able to move in your own kitchen.
Well, and truthfully, if you think about it, if you make the entree with one pan and the sauce with another pan and the side dish with the third pan, you're just exponentially increasing the amount of pans you got to clean. So it's all well and good to get out your, you know, an infinite variety of pans, but then you're just making that many more things you have to clean up. And so there is some relationship between I'm using it, I'm rinsing it in between and using it again, versus I'm adding another pan and another pan and another pan to keep cooking, and that much more to have to clean up. Now, if you have a dishwasher, then, you know, you can get away with that stuff, but it does require that you actually load the dishwasher. So there is that point. It just means that there's another pan you got to put in the dishwasher. And if you don't do that well, then having infinite variety doesn't really help you stay on top of your kitchen. And so you really have to look at the connection between how much chaos I create in the kitchen and how that impacts my ability to clean the kitchen and put it away for the next time, which is going to be a few hours later. So you don't want to, you don't want to really hang yourself up.
Samudra said some things you might need three of, and I will agree that you probably need three ice cream scooping solutions. Because there's the one that's dirty in the dishwasher, and there's one you're using tonight, and then there's one in reserve in case later on someone else wants ice cream, and both of those are dirty. So, yeah, sure.
You don't want to slow down ice cream consumption, man. No, you don't want to get in exactly. the way of that.
A couple of people asked in the chat for clarification on what kind of containers Marsh was talking about. And she added containers that organic protein bars come in. Brand name is Go Macro, textured for ease of use. I'll have to take a look and see if I can see what those look like, because that might be useful to.
But it's probably it's the container that they ship it in and intend for it to be container. Sitting on the counter. Yeah. Kitchen, at the store. And so she's just using those display pieces.
Anita shared, I'm short, so I have two solutions, my tall brother and a series of small stools in every room.
Right.
Most are folding, but the one in the kitchen is non-folding and I just kick it around when I need it.
Right.
I also use a reacher with suction cups a lot.
Oh, the grabber with suction cups is a really helpful thing. So another strategy that was shared with us is Penny shared, I clean up as I cook and I try to do the dishes right away. Spices are labeled and in racks, not in a jumble. Appliances like food processor and toaster are stowed in lower cabinets and easily accessible. And, you know, that's a definition of keeping your kitchen functional is how she's doing that. And the idea of putting those big appliances that you don't get it into every day and having them be stowed in a lower cabinet is a great idea. Doing the dishes is so annoying, but unless you switch to paper plates for everything and cook all your meals in one pot, you're going to be doing dishes for the rest of your life. So learning to handle this meal's dishes today is the only way to stay ahead. Creating a sink full of dishes and leaving it for 2 weeks does nothing to improve the cleaning and dishwashing process. and recruit help from everybody that eats in your house and keep up with it every day. And your future self will thank you. And Penny's doing that by washes dishes as she goes and in the cook process, and also then doing the dishes after the meal is done. And so she's staying ahead of it so that she doesn't have to look at a whole sink full of crazy dishes 2 weeks later. And I have been in houses. I have had these clients where I show up and the kitchen counter, the sink is full of dishes and there's dirty stuff on the counter. And it just sort of is spreading like an amoeba along the countertop. And people just keep adding dirty, waiting for that magic moment when someone comes behind and spends 2 hours to clean up. And in the meantime, it's all, there's food residue and it's wet. And so it gets nasty and it starts to smell and it turns to mildew, and it's just not improving the process for you at all by waiting. And so anything that you can do, if you can clean it now, it doesn't have time to turn putrid and disgusting. And cleaning it now makes it the smallest quantity of stuff that you have to deal with at any one point in time. Getting on the dishes, you got to do it. Ellen says, mostly getting extras out of my kitchen. I have one storage tote in another room that contains infrequently used items like a cookie press, serving platters, etc. Only my most used cookbooks lived in the kitchen, and the overflow is on a bookshelf in another room, which is exactly the best thing to do. That point is really valuable. If you don't use it to function in the kitchen, it doesn't need to live in there. It's just taking up space that is way more valuable for the functioning kitchen as something else than your storage space. One responder suggested a double-decker drying rack has helped with the dishes after hand washing, but the new problem is getting the dishes put away afterwards. Of course, it's a multi-stage problem no matter how you go about it. And washing dishes, that's stage one. Drying the dishes is stage two. Putting them away is stage three. And whatever tools you that help you do that all along the way, you still got to wash them, you still got to dry them, you still got to put them up. And so recognizing that that process is going to happen every day, I think, is the biggest impediment to kitchen functioning well and being easily managed. Is that you go in and get food every day and you go in there several times a day to do it, but you don't complete the reset process every day. And within a day, your kitchen is out of control because it hasn't been reset.
Speaking of food, Connie asked, any strategies for maintenance of the refrigerator? My fridge is always overflowing and I am constantly throwing away food that sat in the back of the fridge too long. And there are actually a couple of solutions were presented in the chat. Catherine said, my rental has a horribly designed refrigerator that makes it hard to see and access food. I think I have lived in that same place. Catherine went on to say, I found clear acrylic trays and use them as drawers for the more inaccessible shelves. Well worth the cost and still loving it 2 years later.
The Container Store has a lot of those shelves. And they're like acrylic and they're very narrow. They have very narrow fronts with like handles on, lip handles on the front of them so you can pull them out, but they're designed to be long and skinny. So you can put in several long and skinny things on those shelves and then pull and see that each container has different kinds of stuff in it. And you can pull out this long and skinny container that has 5 condiment jars in it and you can find the condiment jar you want and then slide it back. And that way it's easy to get to and you can make full use of the whole shelf. I will say that the biggest issue with fridges being A, overstuffed and B, not cleared out is that Ed talked about it earlier, that you buy more than you can actually use. And then it goes in there and it gets shoved to the back because it doesn't get used. And then it dies back there and you have to circle back. Nobody wants to tackle the whole fridge at once, but when you go to the grocery store and come home with stuff, the first thing that you do is open the fridge and start shoving things in there. But you should consider it part of your shopping process that before you go to the store, you go into the fridge and throw out the stuff that's dead. You move things around and figure out what's already in there so that you are very clear about what you already have. and that you have made space for the new stuff to come in and bring the stuff that is still edible and not the newest stuff, bring that stuff forward so that when you put new groceries in, the new stuff goes in behind, it goes in the back, it goes at the bottom, so that you can use up what's still there waiting to be used before you get into the new things. And I think the biggest thing that I have to do is, because there's not much going on in my house, I don't have six people living here trying to eat food at once. And so buying enough for me to eat and staying on top of that means that I need to buy way less than I think I do and way less variety. So I don't get to have 17 options this week because I can't consume 17 options in a week. I only get to have 3 options this week, and the other 14 options are for next week and the week after that and the week after that, because that volume, if you buy and give yourself endless variety when you don't consume at that rate, means you're going to have the fridge is going to be stuffed and you're going to be throwing away food because it's not going to stay in there and wait for you to have time to eat it. So you really have to monitor the consumption rate of how stuff goes in and out of your fridge and buy way less than you think. And certainly don't go, like Ed says, don't go when you, you know, you're hungry and come home with 17 options that you then can't eat.
And the double whammy is going when you're hungry and not shopping from a list, because you'll come home with everything. Catherine also added, besides the shelf trays, I keep small containers on the door shelves that hold most of my condiments. Before going to the store, I try to check every area and remove anything past use. These trays also make it easy to clean up spills and clean half a shelf at a time.
Yeah.
Which is great, because as you said, the complete fridge purge is a heinous chore that no one ever wants to do. So any way that you can corral things and limit your focus, and, you know, maybe it's before this weekend's shopping trip, you address the top shelf, and next week you tackle the second shelf. And so you've got some kind of cycle of rotation where everything gets looked at every 2 or 3
once a month,
weeks.
Whatever
it takes,
making yourself through it. Yeah. And again, I will say, this is another place where I know people who, like, just, they never feel like they have enough food unless their refrigerator is groaning and about to explode when they open the door. And that to me is just addressing a fear of lack of food when that really isn't the issue. And so you're sort of assuaging a fear there that really it's not serving you in terms of managing your kitchen or making food preparation easy or making cleanup easy if the refrigerator is stuffed to the gills. And so trying to examine how and why you overstuff it and what you think you're accomplishing by buying that jar again or buying that extra meat or buying that extra vegetable that you can't possibly get to. How is that helping you other than giving you another thing to clean and throw away and wasting your money? And so maybe it can help you if you think about it in terms of the waste that you generate in order to feel like you have all the variety that you want. The way that I cope with it myself is that I spread that variety not over my week over week grocery shopping, but I spread that variety over a longer time window. I can't have 6 meat options this week. I can only have 2 because I'm going to cook one and I'm going to have leftovers and I'm going to go to a dinner meeting and I'm going to eat out with somebody. And then I'm going to cook the second thing and have leftovers and I'm going to have to eat the leftovers. And so if I don't want my kitchen to be out of control, I can't buy 6 meat options every week. And so it requires some understanding about how fast you consume, how fast your family consumes, and not buying more than you need to. And I have a friend, Jan, who is currently she's spending a month eating what she has. And it's, you know, you're trying to cook out of your kitchen, only use stuff that you already own. And she's refreshing with, I think with some new meat every week. But basically she's like, I'm going to cook what's in my freezer. I'm going to cook what's in my pantry. I am not buying anything else. And she is actively trying to dwindle her supplies because it's gotten too big. And so you would be surprised. You may not have your favorite thing in the pantry, but you have something in there that you can eat. And so actively trying to concentrate on eating what's there and not constantly increasing the variety in the fridge and in the pantry will help with your kitchen clutter a lot, being more aware of how much you can eat and how much you can really store and use.
Anita had another great suggestion, which is, she said, I use masking tape to write the description and date of refrigerated and frozen food. It helps cut down on science projects found weeks later. Well, yeah. masking tape or painter's tape will work. Yeah. You know, the blue painter's tape works great for that and peels off of plastic or Pyrex containers very easily. And it's so easy to put something in the freezer and think, I will know what this is later. And then it freezes and looks completely different.
And you have no idea. Like,
is that might be, you know, overripe bananas, or it could be a loaf of bread. I can't tell.
Exactly. Exactly. And like it's said, you're going to be like, oh God, it's too hot. I don't want to cook tonight. My friend called and asked me to go to dinner. So I had planned on making this meal, but then that gets punted because I get a better offer and better plans. And, you know, practically anything is a better offer than having to eat my own cooking over here. So, you know, I have to learn to shop to accommodate the fact that I'm not going to eat out of my own kitchen 100% of the time.
CJ found an example of the containers we were talking about, and I'm going to share CJ's screen so that those who are on the video and those who are watching live can see what we're talking about, the Go Macro Bar containers. It's a sturdy recycled material,
cardboard
probably
thing.
You know, made out of cardboard, that has been processed to be sturdy.
Molded,
and the example for people who are listening to the podcast, the example shows this shallow container reused as a planter for a house plant. And Marsh has her hand up. Go ahead, Marsh.
Now, the thing is, they're also coming in longer sizes. They're like two of these, and they're coming deeper. I just don't use the meat ones at all. Yeah. And they've got different colors now. This is the natural color. They have a cream, and they have a light white. So thank you. That's all. I'll get off.
Thanks for sharing that. Okay. We should talk about next week.
Yes, we should.
So we got a ton of responses to the survey, and I think people really enjoy this edition. So we're going to do the same thing next week, but talk about bathrooms, which are another
crazy story zone.
Clutter magnet.
Right.
Frequently a teeny tiny space where you're trying to relax and clean yourself and maybe put on makeup and do your hair and fix up your skin and read on your iPad. That's my addition to the list. And it's a real problem. So next week, we're going to talk about tips to get the bathroom organized as quickly as you can say, Calgon, take me away. Join us next week, Tuesday, July 19th, 2022 at noon U.S. Central Time, live in Zoom and streaming on Facebook for Clean as a Whistle, Decluttering Solutions for the Bathroom. You want to talk to us about the title?
Yes, let's talk about the title. Reclaiming the Kitchen is our title this week. And this week's assignment is to address kitchen clutter using one of the approaches we've talked about today. The first approach is to cultivate a new kitchen habit. So you want to use the tiny habits method we've discussed before to pair a new habit that you want to create with an existing successful habit. For example, after you start coffee brewing, maybe that's the existing habit. then maybe you want to generate a new habit of unloading and putting away one rack of the clean dishes from the dishwasher while the coffee's brewing. That's a perfect example of go do something you normally do in there and then tack on another part of the process. Clean, wash a couple of dishes, put away something that's dry, go into the kitchen, the refrigerator and pull out some dead stuff from a shelf. Those kinds of habits you can tack to something else you're doing in there.
Well, and especially if it's, if there's a little downtime associated with the first habit. So maybe you set up your coffee and hit go, and it's a minute or two before you can get that first cup that you so desperately need. And you could go off and try and do something else, but you could also just spend that minute usefully in the kitchen.
Stay there and wait for your coffee. And, you know, putting dishes doesn't require a lot of brain power. So putting something up or loading dishes into the dishwasher, that definitely doesn't require any brain power. So it's a perfect time to spend a minute and do something else. So the second approach, a place for everything, just not in the kitchen. So what we mean by that is you want to identify any item that keeps finding its way into your kitchen that doesn't actually need to be there. So let it go if you can, or assign it a new storage location elsewhere in the house. So this is the place where you address, I'm collecting dinnerware and I keep trying to put it in the kitchen. Well, no, it's a collection. It's not active kitchen use. And so that needs to live somewhere else. I'm collecting, my grandmother's kitchen gadgets. I don't actually want to use them. I just want to keep them. Well, so then that's a keepsake. That's not really active kitchenware. So it needs to go live somewhere else and be, put in a shadow box, hung on the wall, made it into the decor that it is, because it's a keepsake and it's not actually stuff that you're going to use. Now, if you're using your grandmother's egg beater, then fine. But if it's just in there because it's kitchen related, but it's nostalgic to you, then it needs to not be there. It needs to be hanging on the kitchen wall, or it needs to be hanging somewhere else in the house. Whatever you're going to do with it, just recognize that there's things in the kitchen that don't need to be there. Get them out. Keep only what you use and need is the last suggestion approach that we have. Scan your kitchen counters, the cabinets, and the drawers for a tool, an appliance, any item of cookware that you haven't used in a long time, and consider whether you have something else that could serve the same function. And if so, can you let the unneeded item go? This is going to be the place where you make the most impact in your kitchen and how it functions. If you go through and look at all of the pots and pans under the counter and you find the frying pan that you had when you were 20 and the frying pan that you got gifted one Christmas from somebody and the frying pan where the, nonstick surface scratched and the other 37 frying pans that you have and you pull them all out and decide, okay, I'm just storing these frying pans that are still useful in theory, but I'm not using them and I'm never going to use them because I have the ones that I spent $200 on that I really like. If you pull out all those frying pans that you don't need to keep there and pass them on and leave that space for the frying pans that you actually want and use, aim for clearing out some spaces in that way. And that will go a long way to making the kitchen function better and making it easy for you to put things away, get them out, put them away, if you make that evaluation across all your cabinets. And again, you don't have to do the whole cabinet all at once.
Yeah, we're suggesting, downsize one thing. That's a right starting point. I'm going to share one more comment and before we wrap up.
Okay.
Janice said, what has helped me get down to doing the dishes regularly was, one, putting on my headphones with my favorite music and singing along, and ooh, two, pretending I'm a celebrity cleaning my kitchen for a reality show. Suddenly, either way, I feel like a star when doing the dishes.
I love that. That is awesome. That is some serious reframing right there. I love that. And so that is all about improving your mood, improving your attitude, and making it be worth your while. And so Thank you. That was a great suggestion. And you know what?
Put a positive spin.
Right. Put a positive spin. Turn on the radio, bebop, and you're not going to be in there that long. It doesn't take that long. If you just give yourself 10 minutes, you will make a huge dent in the dirty dishes and or putting away the clean dishes. And that 10 minutes will be well spent and well used to affect you the next time you come back to make another meal. So get on it.
Okay, I'm going to make an announcement we don't get around to enough, and mostly so you can show off a new sign. Ah. We finally made a Patreon sign after talking about it for about 2 years. So we want to say thank you to Liz, who's a Patreon supporter, who's with us here today, and all of our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to help support our efforts with a recurring monthly donation of any size, please visit cfhou.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Your contributions help us offset the costs of producing the weekly webcast and will also help us fund new projects that we have in the works. Thank you for your support, Liz, and all of our generous underwriters.
We, you know, we make a little bit of money on YouTube, not a ton. We make a little bit of money from the podcasting. We've just started getting, there's some ads from the podcasting, but we're trying to recognize that that stuff is super irritating to everybody. So,
yeah,
but it still costs us a lot of money to make this happen. So Patreon supporters really help us offset the cost, and we appreciate that so much.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. And that's a new sign too, as I can see by the fact that I can't see through it anymore. We love to hear from you. So please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com. And watch your email for a link to our survey about bathrooms, which we'll probably have out to you tomorrow.
And we'll, it goes out to the subscribers, to the Thursday email list,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then does it show up on the website? Can they access it from the website?
I can do that. We'll put that in the show notes for this week once we have those done. That's and it'll also go, if you're a meetup member, it'll also be in the announcement of the meetup, that link. So There you go.
We want you to be able to find it and come and tell us about your clutter problems in the bathroom. We look forward to it. Thanks everybody for joining this week. We are so happy that you joined us and listened to us talk about clutter, and we will be back again next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.